Hello, this is your host, Belle Shavey speaking. Welcome to today's episode of the Morrison Family Center for Student Wellbeing's podcast, WellCat 101. The purpose of this podcast is to give students an opportunity to share their college experiences, their advice, or interesting anecdotes for listeners who are students, staff, parents, etc. Each episode topic will be related to student well-being and or mental health through the lens of positivity and growth. We hope you enjoy this episode of WellCat 101. Hello there, and welcome back to WellCat 101, the student-led podcast centered around topics relating to student mental health and well-being. I am so excited to be back and even more excited to share this new series of episodes with you. To cut to the chase, these next few episodes will be discussing topics related to loneliness, finding a sense of belonging, and how community impacts our physical and mental health. K-State's Common Read this year, Together, by Vivek H. Murthy, MD, who served as the 19th and 21st Surgeon General of the U.S., discusses related topics, and you will probably hear me reference quotes or passages from this book. If you have not read it and would like to, there are links provided in the description for more information about the book, including other podcast episodes that Dr. Murthy has been a guest on. On this episode of WellCat 101, we are going to be discussing what finding community can look like at a university. Obviously, we will be focusing on what loneliness can look like on a K-State campus, particularly in the residence halls, and how that can impact mental health. We will also be discussing how to find a sense of community and togetherness with our guests here today. Here we have...
Hello, everyone. My name is Aisha, and I'm an assistant director in Housing and Dining Services. What I focus on is academic success and community development. So this is a really important topic that we're talking about. Very excited. Hopefully you live in the residence hall, so you know what we're talking about, or possibly Jardine Apartments. But we are essentially the education beyond academics. So we focus on the life part of it. We teach you how to do your laundry. We help you get through your first breakup. We do a lot of random things that make our jobs very exciting, but that's why I'm very excited to have two of the individuals that were my resident assistants. Hopefully they've helped you at some point in your career, but a resident assistant. They're now graduate assistants, and they're here to talk with us today.
Hello, my name's Fernanda. I am, as Aisha mentioned, a grad assistant here. My title specifically is Assistant Coordinator of Departmental Initiatives, or ACDI. I specifically oversee Smurthwaite, and I do some other side quests.
Hello, I am Rosalie Oliver. I am also an ACDI, but I specify in the tour and events team here in housing. So if you've been on a Res Life tour, that was probably me. I'm also a graduate student. I study college student development.
Awesome. You guys are all so helpful. When I was a freshman a couple years ago, wow, it's kind of hard to believe that I'm a junior this year. So, but that was the first year that they kind of put in the rule that you had to live on campus. I was already planning on living on campus, but they put in the rule that you had to live on campus. I lived in Marlatt, and I had wonderful RAs, and I know that you guys do so much more than just that, but getting through emotional things, especially that first year. I remember October of my first year was probably, it was a super fun time. I loved coming to college, but that I found was the most difficult when the weather starts getting colder, things start changing. You haven't had a break from school in a while. And I remember Res Life was there for me. And that is so, so, so important for what we're going to be talking about here today. So every episode kind of begins with a silly icebreaker question. And this one is kind of silly, but also kind of related to connection. So my question for today is, do you prefer talking on the phone or texting, and why? And from what I gather, you guys have strong opinions. And so I'm excited to hear them.
Well, I think I'm the oldest person in the room, but... hot take. I do not like talking on the phone. I like texting. I do not like, yeah, I like the ability to be able to, like the ability to think through what I'm going to say, but also I like to be silly goofy with it. So doing the emoji reacts, having the special effects that you can add in on an iPhone. Yeah. So that may be showing my generational differences, but I enjoy it a lot.
That's a hot take because nearly everybody I talk to is so team like phone or FaceTime. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I am her. I love phone calls. I am dyslexic and slow to type. And I would just rather just click a button and then we can, you know, have an actual conversation. Nothing like is misleading. You know what I'm saying? If it has to be text, I would do voice memo. And it's not because I love listening to my own voice. It's the closest thing to a phone call. So if I'm texting, I'll do voice memo if it's an option, but call team for sure.
Real.
I wish I loved texting as much as calling. I do love texting, but I realize I can't spell. And many people at this table will know that I spell everything wrong all of the time. So now I've just kind of made calling my go-to so that they can hear my expressions and know what I'm saying without me spelling it wrong.
Absolutely. I fear I am also team phone call. I love a good FaceTime, actually. I was team Android until my senior year of high school. And then I used like Google Duo, which I think is the Google equivalent of FaceTime. But then once I switched to Apple and iPhone and FaceTiming and everything, I don't know. I just love seeing people's faces. I always found my best friend and I met at camp. And so we've never lived in the same city, but that's how we keep in touch is like FaceTime and calling. It's so much more fun to FaceTime because she's like showing me her outfits or her, you know, her hair or something. And it's just nice to have that physical like face connection. So if I were to rank them, I would say FaceTime, phone call, and then texting. I'm not a fan of Snapchat, though. I'm only a fan of like Snapchat videos because then I listen to them like a little podcast. But like audio messages, the same thing. Like when you can send audio messages, I love to listen to people's voices. However, I love texting when it's just like obscure niche meme. Like if you're, I don't know, like if you're on a coworker with somebody or on a staff with someone and you like just send a meme or something to communicate something. Like I work for Lovewell Institute every summer where I get to be kind of like a theater camp counselor a little bit. And to wake each other up in the morning, sometimes just in the staff group chat, someone will send like a cat meme that's just a really up close picture of a cat that just says, "Are you awake?" So I think that that's really fun and peak level of communication. I think that's why the internet was invented, was to share cat memes and cat videos and things like that. So I do love texting when that happens, but team FaceTime and phone call for sure.
Have any of you used MSN Messenger? I think that's why I like to text, because that's all that I had when I was younger. Yeah, so that's my rationale behind why texting is better.
I'm glad we have representation from each team, though. Yes. Like, I'm glad we have team text and team call. But that's awesome. Cool. And that's, I don't know, like, digital communication has become so normalized. I was like, let's ask a question about that to kind of jump into topics dealing with connection. So to get into our topic for today, which is loneliness and finding connection, kind of a broad topic, but that's kind of why I wanted to hone in these few episodes, because there are different perspectives of it and different people's experiences with it. So we wanted to get an inside perspective of what loneliness can look like on a college campus, in a college setting, specifically like res life. And then like how to find a way to feel at home while you're away from home is another kind of area of discussion I wanted to kind of get into today. So from your guys' perspective, what do you find are common reasons that college students kind of struggle with meaningful connections and, you know, feeling lonely?
Yeah, so this has been a big conversation for us for multiple years, and even on a national level, because we're seeing trends of students that are struggling to find their sense of community. So what's really interesting is we were just talking about the internet, and on the internet you can find all of the community, but you aren't seeing it happen in person. So some of the things that we have been discussing is how can we translate that from the virtual setting into the in-person setting. So that's actually what our role is within Residence Life, is to host different programming events. And we have this thing called intentional interactions. So that's reaching every resident and discussing with them how their college experience is going and what we can do to help support them. So really, it's a multifaceted reaching what each person needs, because some people need that big social connection and then other people need an individual conversation and connection. Yeah, so that's at least some of the things that we are trying to do. But I would be curious to hear from you two, you know, if you have any thoughts from students that we've seen in our time, or even yourself when you were a student.
Yeah, for me, when I think of loneliness, I do think of my freshman year of college. It was fall of 2020. We all remember that. So it was a little bit rough. Then my second year becoming an RA, I think I realized one of the biggest things is having options. Like Aisha mentioned, each individual student has individual needs, but I think the lack of options is what makes it hinders students like way around college, if that makes sense. If you have like an RA that only hosts like very like specific like volleyball or sports related like events, then that won't like maybe. It won't be like as helpful for someone that enjoys reading or something like that. So finding, as people that work in residence life, finding different options and outlets for each student to like find their path within their college journey.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with both of you. I think at times when I think of me back in 2020, when it was COVID and I didn't have a roommate or anything, I needed that personal and like intrinsic development because I didn't truly know who I was. And so I didn't know who I was going to portray myself as when it came to the outside world. So it's truly digging deep in yourself and figuring out what you do and what you don't like without the social influence of others.
Absolutely. I think that finding your niche is something that we talk about a lot on this podcast. And I just find myself talking a lot about in life, because coming into college, at least in my experience, I thought I knew who I was. And I thought I was really set in like what I wanted to do and major in and everything. And then whether you stick with some of those things or not, you have experiences that truly like test and develop you into who you are. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to come to college. I was like, I do want to turn my world upside down and I do want to figure out who I want to be and what I want to do. But that can feel so isolating. And so trying new things and doing different things and having options of finding other like-minded people who also might be figuring themselves out is super helpful. And it is one of the reasons why it's a struggle to make meaningful connections, is because everybody really doesn't know. It's kind of easier in high school to make connections because it's almost like forced proximity, you know? At least I came from a small high school. It was the same people every day for years. It's like, oh, I know who these people are. I saw the awkward haircut they had in the seventh grade. Like, we are connected ultimately by the circumstances that we're stuck in. But with college, especially at a bigger university, it's difficult because friendships and connections take so much more effort and time. And even if you're at a smaller college or in a smaller community, everyone has their own life. And so navigating adult mature friendships is so much different than navigating teenage friendships. And so that's so interesting. We had kind of already talked about this, but what strategies have been effective in building welcoming communities in resident halls and student organizations?
I think as a recent senior staff member, aka ACDI, aka grad coordinator of Smurthwaite, I've realized it's important to try to build those connections with residents at every level. And what I mean by that is like, it's like that type of effect of like, you know, RAs are the closest to residents. So sometimes we might like leave them to like make those connections. But like when us as senior staff and then as leadership team, so Aisha as an assistant director, when we also make an effort to get to know the residents that live in our buildings, it does make a difference. It feels like they are welcomed at every level and they can come to you at any level.
Something we started this past year, I guess a little context. I was a community coordinator. That's how I met these two individuals. but we worked together in Haymaker Hall, the residence hall. And something this last year when I was a community coordinator that we tried at the beginning of the year was we had this thing we called orientation. And exactly what Fernanda described is it was hosted by your senior staff members, and everyone that moved in that day had an opportunity to see each other, meet each other, hear what exactly residence life is. Because I think, so I'm a first generation student, and I had no clue what a resident assistant was or residence life. I thought I was in it on my own. So now I'm very passionate. That's why I've stayed in this for 11 years now. I was an RA in 2014. But that's the reason that this has been my career path, is because there was such a foundational experience once I found that community. So really putting yourself out there, I think, is one of the hardest things for our staff to do. But getting that connection with a staff member, whether it's a student staff member or a professional staff member. And then also we'll always put in the plug if you want a job. Residence Life has jobs. We hire a lot of people. And as you can see, Fernanda and Rosalie have been working with me for a long time now. And I think it's because we had people that cared about one another and we felt connected to each other. And so I always encourage them, if you would like to apply, we have multiple different positions available to work the front desk, to be a resident assistant in the dining halls, doing hall council, things like that. Those are all strategies. Even though it's scary to start with, you will find your community or people that you can get connected with.
There will be links to more information in the description of this episode. So if you want to go down there in the show notes and check out what we got down there, you should.
Super exciting. Aisha and Fernanda said amazing things, but I would love to echo if there's a difference between personal connection and like personable connection. And so being personable to people is like saying hi when you see them, or just like having a smile on your face. So even if you're not talking to every single person, because even as an RA, that is very unrealistic, making sure you say hi to your residents as they like walk past, or just like being open with your body language, that is making connection.
That is such a good point. Being approachable, I feel like, although I've never been an RA, I, as a student, would be so much more willing to go and talk to an RA that I know has said hi to me before, acknowledges me in the hallway. Maybe I have never spoken to them, but they know that I'm one of their residents. And I then know, like, oh, I can go to this person. And I also think that connecting over when I was a freshman in our hall, my RA, we had a group chat where she would send messages and thing like announcements and things about, you know, dorm meetings and things like that before breaks, would send like, you know, have a good break, have a good holiday messages. And those, even though they weren't in-person connection, also was like, oh, this resident assistant cares about me and cares about my well-being, even though I don't have anything to speak to them about. I know that I can talk to them about anything that I want.
Yeah. And as Rosalie had shared, being a leader within the community, so maybe you don't want to work for us, that's okay. But even just being open to other conversations. So something that felt really awkward until I was an RA is when you're in the elevator, you're stuck in the elevator together, nothing else to do. Say that someone has a shirt of something that you enjoy. I'm currently thinking about Jurassic Park because I've been playing that video game a lot. So maybe someone has a Jurassic Park shirt on. So that's something that you can start that conversation with them really quick, even though it feels awkward from the beginning, and maybe that person also is going to feel awkward, but now you've made a connection and you've established that as something that you can talk about later. So even if you're not a staff member of ours, knowing that the residence halls and Jardin apartments, that's the whole reason they exist, is so you can find that community. There's people around that also are looking and seeking that. And so, yeah, how do you make yourself available even if you aren't a staff member? That's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk to you guys as Res Life staff, but also just kind of as people, how do you recognize when someone is feeling disconnected, whether they live in the resident hall or you see them at class or somewhere? What are the signs of someone who might be feeling disconnected, either without saying it or in conversation?
So I am a psych major, and I will unfortunately rep that till the day I die. But so as a psych major, we look at like body language and things. And so if you can kind of see that someone is like more of like in the back of the crowd, kind of shying away from things, or if they just don't look happy or enjoyable, you can kind of tell when someone is sad as well. And so just recognizing that, hey, maybe this person's having an off day, but what I can do is I could smile at them, or I could go and introduce themselves, or I could make note in the back of my brain for the next time that I see them to say, is this consistent? Is this happening all the time? But also know that it's good to let people have their space, because we all have bad days. But it's also like, if you see something, say something, because you never know what's going on in people's minds.
And it's hard to know what's going on, especially when you don't know somebody super well. But I think that it is important, if you see consistency, to say something. Also a psych major, rep that forever.
Yeah. In residence life, we talk a lot about being an includer. So something that our staff often will do is floor dinners. Hopefully you should go to those if you don't already.
Winner!
There isn't a link for that, but your RA will be contacting you. but it's called floor dinner. We have dining centers. You have a meal plan so that way you're eating the food you're supposed to and connecting with other people. So something that we would do is a floor dinner. And as a staff member, you're looking around the table to see, does everyone feel included in the conversation? So obviously, someone won't be talking 24/7 all day, every day. So they may be having a quiet day, as Rosalie said. But just gauging as to do they feel welcome in that space is very important. So you don't want to call them out in front of the group. That would be pretty harmful, probably. But even just sitting next to them and saying, how are you doing today? Like, what's going on? How's your day been? Opening up that conversation with those open-ended questions can lead you to a lot of different pathways. And ultimately, even if they don't share with you in that moment, so say, Derby Dining Center, probably not the time to talk about a big life event that's going on. They know that you care enough that they will reach out later and knock on your door at probably midnight and say, hey, can we talk? And then that's when they share what's going on in their life. And it's very impactful. And honestly, the reason that I'm in this. So I know for a fact that these two have both had this happen to them, where people have trusted them with their journey and what they're struggling with. That's literally in some people's job description, is to care. And like you two, my degree as well, we studied the human experience and want to know how we can help everyone feel connected.
Absolutely. And this isn't a question that's down on like my questions sheet, but like, how do you keep the energy to make those connections all of the time is a question that popped up into my brain, because, you want to try and connect with everybody, but how do you also like connect with yourself, I guess, to have that energy? You've got to make sure your own bucket is full before you go and fill up everybody else's. So I'm wondering if you've got, strategies, tips, things that you do to keep yourself connected to yourself.
Well, the short answer is you don't. There is no way. You can't be on 24/7 is what I learned. Unfortunately, I did learn it as I was having my own crisis. I am someone that loves giving, and especially my residents I love my residents so much. Every single year, I have loved them like they are my own children, like my cat. Love them all forever. And I was going through my own crisis when I realized I had to stop, because even as I had my own issues, I was like, oh my gosh, like it's Thursday night, it's floor dinner tonight. But like, I had to just stop and be like, well, I feel like they'll be okay without one floor dinner. And when you also have those boundaries with these people that you care so much for, I think it helps both parties find like a middle ground of like, today I'm on, but maybe tomorrow I'm not. And also communicating with them if it is something that they need to talk to you about, but you're taking a mental day off, maybe redirecting them. We have RAs on call every night, so maybe directing them to them. If it's during the day, maybe directing them to the community coordinator. So finding ways of not being on the whole time.
But also, like you said, redirecting them, not absolutely shutting them down, still, being respectful and being like, I'm here for you. I'm always here for you. Right now, I do have to be here for myself, but here's what you can do, instead of just blindly turning them away and you know, being totally ghosting everybody is also harmful for yourself as well as the other person. So yeah, but setting that boundary, which is hard to do. So I commend you for being able to do that. But having that boundary of, I got to take this moment for me. Here's what you can do, though.
Yeah. At least in our staff team, we discuss boundaries a lot. And there's different types of boundaries. And especially within residence life, this can be a challenging concept to navigate. So if you didn't know, resident assistants have an established room, and that's that way they can engage with the community. So you live with the people that you are taking care of. And so that's a very challenging aspect of even physical boundaries. So I know both them and myself, we had, so you could indicate, like, are you sleeping? Are you studying? Are you away from the building? And being honest with that is really important. So we usually add in the studying aspect so that way you can role model, as Fernanda said, what it looks like to balance between your social life, your academic life, and anything else you need, so your personal life. But yeah, so that's something that's really important. And then some of the emotional boundaries as well. So making sure that you are taking care of yourself and finding the correct outlet when you are struggling. Yeah, so the correct outlet would be your resident assistants. That's someone to talk to if you are having a big life event. Also, I know this isn't the episode, but, you know, like CAPS, any of the well-being resources that we have here on campus, those would be the ideal that you would go to, as they are a confidential source. So there's someone that can help you through very honestly what you're going through and give you professional advice. What our staff is, some of us, you know, studied psychology, some of us, you know, are looking at a human development aspect, but most students aren't studying that. They could be an engineering major, and so they're just trying to get through college. And so with that, that's why it's really important to recognize they're there for support and getting you to a resource that is more knowledgeable, but we're always here if you ever need us.
Yeah, I feel like you all can kind of tell that we were all either trained to do this or we have a degree in this. So I'll let you in on two little secrets. The first one is, if you set a boundary, people are most likely going to understand. And if they don't, that means that they've never learned it before. And so you're teaching them what it looks like to take time for yourself. And the second is that everybody is feeling close to exactly how you are. So if you're feeling stressed and unheard, there could be someone that's next to you feeling the exact same way. So saying how you feel or just being honest with the people around you, that is truly how you make connection.
Absolutely. Yes. Preach to that. I know that coming to college for me was the first time that I had to do things like, I was very blessed with a family that was like, we'll do your laundry while you live here. And so it was the first time I had to do my own laundry and had to cook, you know, three meals a day. Or if I wasn't cooking three meals a day, I had to make time to eat three meals a day with a brand new schedule. I was on my own time. Not that I was very independent in high school, as I think a lot of people are by the time they're a senior. So it you know, I knew when I needed to study and what I needed to get done, but it was that entirely self-driven. There's nobody here to tell me I can and can't do something. I have to learn how to take care of myself, but also how to learn what I need and when I need to connect with other people. It was such a world shift to try to learn how to recognize when I was feeling lonely, because I was always living with my family and I have two brothers, I have siblings. So when I was feeling lonely or I needed somebody to talk to, I would just go downstairs. And I was very blessed to have a supportive family like that, that was able to be there for me and support me. But at college, surrounded by lots of strangers, feeling very alone, I was like, this is probably the most alone I've ever felt. And it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, because there was time for me to take that time to be alone and not have to, you know, worry about anybody else but myself. But then also recognizing when I would spend a few days without really talking to very many people, I was like, okay, maybe I do need to reach out. And you know, it's scary to reach out and try to connect with people. It's a little bit scary to talk to RAs. At least I was at first. It seems really silly, because that's their job, but it's daunting because of that fear of rejection.
Yeah. So I wrote down, I hope I say it right. So I studied family science for my undergraduate degree. And so Bronfenbrenner's ecological systems theory, that's a really popular one if you all haven't heard of it. But it effectively says that there are different systems of support that you need in order to be successful as a human. So you have those that are directly around you, and then it slowly gets bigger and bigger up into like the global scale of social connection. But just thinking of what you described, I think that's really interesting, where you essentially lost a part of your support system to have them close by to you, which is your family. So in college student development, that's my master's degree that I studied here at K-State and that Rosalie is currently studying right now. When colleges or residence life was first created, there's a Latin phrase that I'm trying to remember, in parentis lotis. I should look it up. Anyway, but
we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes. Please fact check me. it's a phrase that effectively says in lieu of parent. And so, yes, thank you, Rosalie. I got acknowledgement. I am not making things up. Effectively what that means is that we have now become a support system similar to what your family would be. So thinking a lot of first year students will connect with someone in their residence hall or someone, a small group of people that they stay connected with for many years. I think it's really powerful that that's almost the same as what you had when you were a child with your family. So that's a really cool thing that we get to help develop and that you can experience in the residence halls.
Yes, that's so, I love all of like, I don't know, referencing multiple aspects of this topic with, you know, whether that be with science, psychological science, or just basic human connection. Like, this is how I feel. I love having conversations like that. Now I kind of want to pivot a little bit and talk about involvement in student groups and leadership opportunities, because that seems to be, when talking about loneliness, we know how it affects the human psyche. We know that it is mental and physical. I mean, health is mental and physical. And even in Dr. Murthy's book, he talks about how the physical aspects of being lonely, it can have health effects as well as mental health effects. And so human beings are proven to be social animals. So we've identified that loneliness equals bad. But loneliness is such a broad topic to tackle, especially because there is no, you know, it's not like a common cold where it's like, okay, I can take some ibuprofen and drink some Gatorade and rest for a couple days and I will feel better. Or I can take some antibiotics and, you know, cure my strep throat or whatever it be. Loneliness is a little bit different because mental health is different than that. It's a little bit more of a longer process into learning what you need and what you need to do. So I feel like involvement in student groups and becoming more involved in the community that you are surrounded with, even though it is different than what you had at home, is at least the start of a solution. It might not be the solution for everyone, but I have found it was a great start for me, and I think is a great start for a lot of people. So what role does student groups or leadership opportunities play in fostering a sense of belonging?
Yeah. So at least for me, it was critical being a first year student. So first I started as a student athlete at different institution, and I ended my career because of an injury and then transferred to a different school, started over for sophomore year. So there was a lot of rebuilding over and over again. And I think the way that I found that involvement was first, obviously, through athletics, but then I was also in choir, and I had a few other like journalism and like marketing groups that I was doing as part of my major at the time. I changed my major 5 times. With that, it was once I got involved and met other people that I wanted to stay at college. So when I first started, I was thinking I'll be in and out within 2 to 3 years. I'm going to load all of my classes and get out of here, get into the real world, because it costs a lot of money to go to college. But then the longer that I stayed and made more connections, the more valuable that I saw. And now this is my career field. So so it's very critical. I also think there's, so you had mentioned just experiences here at college and how you grow and develop. So in psychology, I do remember this as well. typically your brain is not fully developed until you're 24 or 25. So in this period where you are 18, 19 years old, coming to college, maybe leaving at 23 or 24, maybe beyond that if you want to keep getting degrees like we did and putting yourself through more pain. You may have a lot of different iterations of yourself. So it's okay to explore and see what are things that you like, even if it's different than maybe what your family taught you, maybe if it's different than what you've ever done in high school. Just getting out there and being open to experiences really, at least for me, helped me find who I was and develop that a little bit better. Really just exploring and being open to any type of org, I think, is really important.
So my field is mass communications. It has nothing to do with this or the question, but I felt like I just had to rep it as well since we're doing the other ones. Go mass comm. Whoop, whoop.
Heck yeah.
So in terms of student orgs and group orgs, I am an extreme introvert. Fall 2020 didn't help. There was not much to do. Even what you could do, it was like incredible. Like social distancing, it wasn't very good. I did start my career as a student athlete as well. I also did end my career, not due to an injury, but due to, I didn't want to do that anymore.
Which is valid.
But after, I feel like also when you come from high school, there are all these things and clubs and activities like we've talked about, like it's so the norm to do that when you come here, I mean, I thought I was going to be an athlete my whole life, and then I came here and I realized there is just so much more, and turns out I actually don't like sweating. So my sophomore year, when things were a little bit more normal, finding those spaces of, obviously I became an RA, which was incredible. The other RA that I knew, she was amazing, so she was actually the one that encouraged me to apply as a mid-year hire, which is when I got the job the second semester of my sophomore year, and it really changed things for me. And then through these like new lenses that I had, finding all these student orgs that we have, like Hall Council and all the other ones, like I was gonna say SJA, not SJA, NRHH and ARH, it was incredible. And I love repping those for all my residents and everybody that's interested, because those are opportunities I didn't really have. Our Hall Council was just banned my freshman year. So even though I didn't get those experiences, I always suggest people to do those things and try them out, like CAT communities. I was too introverted to try one, and I feel like I would have loved a CAT community, but I was too afraid to do that. So just, again, giving people the option to explore themselves and like what they want to do, I think that's really valuable.
I think it's so important to recognize that, and also to understand that there is an organization out there for everybody. I am not super familiar with every single organization on K-State campus, but I guarantee there is something, even if it's not like Mathletes, even if it's like, I'm sure there's like a napping club out here somewhere on campus, or a reading club, or a, for literally anything that you're into. And I think that like a lot of introverted people, they might be scared off by like, well, I want to join an organization, but I'm not really interested in a leadership position. I don't want to devote like my entire life to a student organization because I already have a lot on my plate right now, you know, and that kind of hinders people from wanting to join and become a part of something. There are so many low stakes, low maintenance clubs that you can join. I mean, maybe they're not so much low maintenance that you don't have to show up for anything. Like, you do probably still have to show up for meetings and do events and things like that. But even just going to things at the union, or coming to one or two events that an organization, even if you're not a member of that organization, I know that organizations love it when people who are non-members come to their events and participate, even if it's just for a lot of the organizational events will have free food or free stuff. And I know that as a college student, I love things when they're free. So go to those things, even if it's just one or two, even if it's just a club that is a little bit low maintenance, or something that you is something really niche that you're into. Like, if you are really into watching a specific genre of movie, there's a horror movie club out there, I'm sure. Like, just things that you are really into, don't be afraid to go and join those things as well. If you want a leadership position, want to be super, super involved, do it. Absolutely. But even people who are like, you know, not really wanting to, I have a lot on my plate. I don't really want to be super involved. There's still community for you.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. Like, we talk about leadership all day, every single day, but the true part is like being that first follower. So what that looks like is I was in band. I wasn't an athlete, but I played the bass drum. Love that for me. Sorry, I had to rep it, band nerd. Anyway, so that first follower is that person that is right after the leader that is like, okay, I'm on the bandwagon. That is exactly what I'm going to do. So if you're wanting to get involved, just show up to the event. Sit in the back of the event, just be there in the space, because that is connection. And then in a few weeks, challenge yourself to go say hi to somebody or sit towards the front, and just do those little things, because leadership will come in time. And it's not something you just have to throw yourself into, especially if you're like a freshman and you're younger. Take time to live, be 18. Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, and the just bouncing off, this is amazing. We are building and we're building. The only other thing I could think of to say was also look at yourself as an inviter. So like if there's people around you, how can you bring them into the experience? So maybe it's you're going to a club and like Rosalie said, you're really scared. An example is this podcast. I was scared to talk alone, even though they've done everything to make this a welcoming experience and I was so excited to do it. I was still scared. So what did I do? I invited two of my best friends so that way they would come and help me feel more comfortable in this space. And it worked, and they're doing amazing. So so with that, thinking of how you can invite more people into that experience. So maybe you are nervous about going to the organizational club. Maybe you're nervous about like going to the dining hall. Is there someone that you can take with you, or even putting it in the group chat? And just know you may experience a time where you invite people and no one says yes. That's just a part of putting yourself out there and extending leadership in itself. So an example, I'm talking about Jurassic Park a lot today. Hopefully they don't come after us for branding, but so the Jurassic Park movie is coming up soon. What am I going to do? I'm going to put it in the group chat and see if anyone else wants to come with me, because I could go to that movie by myself, but it feels like a more rewarding experience if I can have other people around me. So something as big as a student org or something as little as going to the movies or going to dinner is going to help more people feel connected.
I love that phrase, like being an inviter. That makes me think of all of the things that you have to learn how to do as a first-time college student. Like I'm like a mix between an introvert and an extrovert. I can be very extroverted at times. It's the theater in me, but I do recharge by myself. However, sometimes it is just a drag trying to get myself to run errands or to do things that are really like tiny menial tasks that I know have to get done, but just sit undone forever. Inviting people to do things like grocery shopping with you or running errands, that's connection. That was something that when I learned that I didn't have to do laundry or grocery shop or, you know, walk to go mail a letter or something that I needed to do alone, you know, go visit the financial aid office. I don't have to do that by myself. If I have someone that I'm like, hey, I have a connection and maybe we both need to go to the financial aid office, let's go do it together. Because financial aid, I know nothing about financials, guys. I have to ask 90 questions every time I go in there. But it's like nice to have maybe somebody else go with you. Maybe they need to go there for the same purpose, maybe not. But if you invite somebody to go with you, it's infinitely more fun. And also, if someone invites you to go do something like grocery shop with them, you know, maybe you do have something else going on and you can't, and that sucks, but say yes. You know, like it'll take maybe an hour, and you know, if you can put off your homework for an hour, or if you can put off something else for an hour to go make that connection and spend that time with another person, that also fosters community. I am going to call out one of my friends. Her and I were supposed to get coffee. This happened this past like spring semester when like allergies were going around, running rampant, everything. And she comes out of her voice lesson. We were at McCain and we're about to go get coffee. And she's like, I unfortunately need to go to urgent care and get antibiotics. I was like, oh my goodness, are you okay? And she was like, yeah, but I'm going to have to cancel our coffee. And I was like, do you want me to go with you to urgent care? And she was like, actually, yeah, that would be really great. And so we went to urgent care together, and I sat with her like out in the waiting room, hung out with her, went with her. So she didn't have to go by herself. And she told me, she was like, I was going to ask you to maybe come with me to urgent care, even though we were supposed to go get coffee, but I was too afraid to, but I'm so glad that you went with me. And I was like, I'm so glad that I was able to be there for you, and I'm glad that you're okay. And obviously, you know, don't be asking all of your friends to go to urgent care with you if you don't want to. But even things like that, where it's like, I'm really scared, I don't have like a parent with me, I have a friend that I feel comfortable enough to ask to come with me. Most of the time, like, if they're your friend, they'll say yes. And you don't, I know that that's unconventional, but if you need support in that time, don't be afraid to like go out and make that connection with them. Even things like grocery shopping, running errands, you can go do those things with other people, and they can become something fun rather than something that you just have to do. And once I realized that, it kind of changed my life.
Yes, Fernanda and I have been going to the grocery store together for the last 4 years. So friendships like this do last, people. Me and Fernanda are the attest to that.
Well, and I just love that example because I wrote down literally and figuratively. I think it's a good analogy of going to the grocery store, because there are some people, that don't have a car. And so it is a big challenge, at least here in Manhattan, walking out to like Walmart. That's quite a trek. And so if you have someone that has a car, that's very helpful. But you also don't want to put them, in a bad place. So it's really hard to ask and be like, can I get in your car with you and drive at a certain time to the grocery store? So that's why if you just open up and make it an invitation where you're all available, then it provides more just general accessibility for people to engage and have more connections and build friendships. I mean, just yesterday, Fernanda, was it yesterday? I don't know. We saw each other somewhere and we were talking about a big life event for her, which was picking up her kitty Tora for the very first time, adopting her from the shelter. And one of our fellow staff members, Adrian, we were just reflecting on how sweet it was that Adrian drove her to the shelter and they picked up, the kitty together. And that's her child now. So it was a very special moment and really, blossomed a friendship. And they didn't know each other very well at all at that point. So,
yeah. I mean, as a extreme introvert, I fear going places alone a lot, which is really funny, I think, because going back to the phone call question, I can call up a place and make an appointment, no problem. Mm. But actually going to the place is a problem. So I do remember the T. Russell shelter is a little ways away. It's a little bit in the outskirts of Manhattan. So, and I really don't like driving. So I was like, I don't want to go alone. What do I do? And that day, Rosalie was busy. Another one of our coworkers was busy too. And like Aisha said, I didn't really know Adrian that well. But I was like, okay, just ask. And it ended up being amazing. And she's like Tora's favorite aunt. Sorry, Rosalie. So it's like, it's just beautiful. And it all started because I asked,
This drama
on the podcast.
The world knows. The after hours with all the drama will be after this. So
Tora will be speaking.
Speak on that. That's so awesome. I love thinking about memories that I had that were made that were just based on like, I had a hair appointment and didn't want to go by myself, so I took my friend and it ended up being like an adventure. There are still moments and things that I talk about with my friends that happen literally while we're going to go do something else. And this is the first kind of way that I made connection with my roommate my freshman year. Was like, oh, she needed a shoe rack for our dorm, and she was like, do you want to come to Target with me? And we ended up going to Target and finding these like really realistic looking, but they were fake temporary tattoos, and we found them in the nail aisle because we both like doing our nails, and we bought them together, and we had like fake temporary tattoos together. And that was such a cool memory that was literally just fostered because she was like, I need to go get a shoe rack and I don't want to go by myself. So, And it's a really good way to also like kind of open that invitation to doing things together. I had a roommate. I used like the Room Sync app thing because I didn't know anybody who was coming to K-State that wanted to like live in Marlat and things like that. And I was wanting to reach out and meet new people. So I didn't know my roommate before coming. I hadn't even met her in person. I just had conversations with her via text. And so that was one of the first ways that we could connect was like, oh, I guess it is out of necessity, but do you want to come with? And I said yes to that invitation. So yes, invite people, but also say yes to the invitations when you are invited places, because I was a little bit nervous because I was like, oh, you know, we don't really know each other that well. It might be awkward. And yeah, it might be awkward at first when you go and hang out with this other person, especially if you're running errands. There's, you know, a separate mission that you're going to be doing together. But sometimes that's helpful because you're like, oh, you need to go get a shoe rack. Well, I actually need to go grab shampoo, so I'll meet you back here. Like it allows you to have something else to do other than like being forced to, talk to each other. But it can also be the door and the avenue for you to meet and connect. And like, you know, we found out that we both liked, you know, doing our nails and things like that. And so then we ventured into the nail aisle and found the temporary tattoos. So, you know, just little things like that, like, you know, going and picking up a new kitty can make you have a new friendship connection. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Curiosity is very powerful. So I know that's something we talk about a lot in residence life, especially for a resident assistants, because you have so many different people from different backgrounds that live on the floor in the community and our overall campus. And so that's the beauty of college, I think, and why I love working here is because you can find people who are completely different than you or have completely different interests. And until you like fully engage and ask those questions and learn more about them and the activity, you don't know if you like that. And so that's why I think just asking questions, being open to experiences. As you said, you know, putting on temporary tattoos, it feels silly, but that's something you're going to think about for many, many years beyond this. So now, if everyone wants to know my age, I'm 31 years old. So when I look back, like those are the moments that I remember. I don't really remember how stressed I was about, you know, whatever paper it was at that time. I do remember when the printer wasn't working and I had to print late at night, but that was my fault for procrastinating. Anyway, so with that, just thinking of, like how you can be curious and be open to new experiences, truly, truly very powerful.
Absolutely. And like that can help you feel more at home, away from home. Like we kind of said at the beginning of this episode, like a sense of belonging makes you feel more at home, especially in a place that is a room that you're maybe sharing with another person that is a wall of cinder block that definitely, for me at least, didn't look anything like the room that I had at home. To quote the book Together that is the K-State Common Read, in the preface, Dr. Murthy says, "To be at home is to be known. It is to be loved for who you are. It is to share a sense of common ground, common interests, pursuits, and values with others who truly care about you." You know, even maybe if you don't see eye to eye on absolutely everything, if you foster connection with people that check in on you, that care about you, that is the true, I guess, path to feeling at home, especially with college where you're kind of moving around to different places. Things don't really feel, not that my dorm room didn't feel like mine, but it was definitely a shared space. Like things that you can do to make college feel like home often involve connecting with other people, connecting with yourself, finding a student organization or community, things that maybe are not physical. Like you can't really buy an antibiotic that's going to fix your loneliness, but you can go with your friend to urgent care and get her antibiotics for her throat. And then maybe that in a way is going to help you make a better connection. And I don't want to say cure your loneliness, but it definitely can help.
Yeah. Maybe this is the final plug, but the answer to all of this is talk to your RA. Yes. Or your community coordinator. Just so you know, this is basically our life, is learning about what's going on campus and how you can get involved in different areas. So while the RA may not be in that organization, they can point you towards the resource that knows more about it and can get you connected. So yeah, so I would just encourage you, try to talk to them. You live with them. That's why I use them as the easy resource. And then maybe you can get more confidence to end up going to some of those offices or visit the union and come to places like the Wellbeing Center.
I guess one last thought I had, as we were talking about leadership and reaching out to people and building community, as an introvert, I think there's this misconception that a leader has to be loud and they have to be strong and they have to be very visible. This is also something I learned through my years as an RA. You don't have to be that. It's amazing if that's who you are. But like for me, I was definitely more of a quiet leader, a silent leader. I'm very good with one-on-one connections, do not do so well in big groups. So kind of find the way in which you can help people, and the way, if you do want to be a leader, find that way that feels comfortable for you. Yes, it's good to like go outside of your comfort zone sometimes, but I think when it comes to leadership, just find what feels right.
Absolutely. And there's a need for every single type of leader, no matter where and no matter how.
Yeah, my last thought is people are going to love you for who you are. So don't be afraid to get out there and show yourselves. Aisha and Fernanda are the two people that I know that care about me no matter who I become, because they saw me back when I was a freshman. And we all grow. Just get out there and challenge yourself, because I promise you there's going to be somebody out there that not only values you, but can like help you grow and help you like be on a podcast one day.
Absolutely.
And my final thought, so we talk a lot within our trainings about the goldfish effect, and effectively what that means is for a student leader, you're often put as someone that people can look to as a position of authority, but someone that is trusting. And so everyone can see everything you're doing 360 all around all the time, right? Well, we put that on our student staff members, but I do think it applies to you as students as well, even if you don't have a leadership position currently. So just know you are a role model to someone. So as both Fernanda and Rosalie said, being true to yourself, putting yourself a little bit outside of your comfort zone so that way you can grow and learn more about the world is very critical. But just know there's someone that's watching you and admiring you, even if they don't tell you that. So I hope that gives you a little confidence to get out there and know that there, yes, your community is out there. There's people that love being able to facilitate that, and so they can be a resource for you. And overall, just get involved. That's part of being a case stater and being able to have that passion later on that you can look back at and be like, I did that. I was a case stater and I had a really good time.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much for being guests on this podcast. I absolutely loved the conversation that we got into. And thank you so much, Aisha, for bringing Fernanda and Rosalie on. I just love it when besties are on the podcast. So it makes for really lovely conversation. And this is exactly the kind of thing that the kind of episodes I want to record. This is awesome. For our listeners, if you would like to know more about the resources mentioned in this podcast, they are linked in the description. There will be lots and lots of information down there. So be sure to check those out, not only on this episode, but on every episode that you listen to. And if you would like to know more about how to get involved and also more about the wonderful guests on this episode, more information about them is also provided. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.